world, where innovation meets the law.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. Coming up today, the crisis for older Americans. Some older Americans are falling into the gaps. We're going to talk with an author of a new book who has some ideas about what to do when you're facing poverty and you're not quite retired. And then later on in the program, we're going to talk about some of the big national issues, too, including the latest on the shutdown. We'll talk about some new Democratic candidates for president, and we'll open the phone lines, too. Well, first up today, 20 million elderly Americans will be in poverty by the year 2035, a rate that the country has not seen since the Great Depression. And 40% of current older workers and their spouses will be downwardly mobile, falling into poverty or near poverty during old age. And even the good news, such as the number of jobs held by older workers, it has increased by 6.6 million over the last decade. But half of those jobs, 52% or 3.4 million of those jobs held by older workers, pay full-time workers less than $15,000 a year. Crisis not only impacts baby boomers, millennials don't have retirement savings either as they face down education debt, flat wages, uncertain work, plus escalating costs in housing and healthcare. Our guest, Elizabeth White, has been there. She's an author, and she's also an entrepreneur, having co-founded and led a chain of home decorative stores in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and New York. She began her career in international development at the World Bank. She earned a B.S. in political science from Oberlin and an M.B.A. from Harvard Business School. She also attended Johns Hopkins University. But she fell on hard times later in life. And she's written a new book about what to do. The book is called 55, Underemployed and Faking Normal. Here's my interview, with Elizabeth White. Elizabeth White, welcome to WMNF. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
So I want to ask you your story, your trajectory, the trajectory of your life that led you to write this book. Take us back to, a few years ago.
So first I want to say it's my lived experience. I'm someone who's had a career choice and decent incomes and have been doing well for a long time. And then when I got to my mid-50s, my phone stopped ringing. And I had the kind of network that I would hear about jobs before they were actually posted. But something happens in your mid-50s to your network. So when we think of a network, we usually have people 10 years older and 10 years younger. So 10 years older, people are in their mid-60s, and what I found is that some people had retired. Some people weren't in pole position like they used to be, didn't have the juice they used to be. Some people had even died. And phones stopped ringing, mid-50s. And the other thing we now know, there's just been some really good research by ProPublica and the Urban Institute that says more than half of workers in their 50s are going to be pushed out of the workforce. Some will be downsized, some will be terminated, some will be forced out by the environment becomes so toxic they jump before they're pushed. But it's over 50%. The other thing about that number is that when people get jobs again, only 10% get jobs as good as the ones they left. So when my phone stopped ringing, and I was shocked about this because I have Harvard background, as you mentioned, Oberlin, Johns Hopkins, I'd worked at the World Bank. This is not what I thought was going to happen to me. I started to notice friends of mine with similar kinds of backgrounds also struggling. What does struggling look like? You're in a car with someone, they're putting $4 or $5 of gas in their car. You see someone who is normally would order a glass of wine, they're ordering mineral water. You see somebody who's long between haircuts. Women talk, and women friends of mine, we started to talk honestly about what was happening to us. And at some point, I wrote an essay that described what's it like to land here. What's it like to have your face pressed up against a glass, looking in at a life that is no longer your life? The essay made its way onto the PBS Facebook page, and within 3 days, it had 11,000 likes and 1,000 comments. And I remember being stunned that it got this kind of response. I read every comment, and people were saying, me too, my brother, my husband, myself, my best friend, how come we're not having this conversation? With my background, I'm able to look at the data. So let me give you like just two quick numbers that I think really frame this. The median savings, retirement savings, for Americans near retirees, so 55 to 64, is $15,000.
Wow.
$15,000. And that's across the board. So let's look at just middle income. The median savings for middle income near retirees is $60,000. And think about this. So how long are we going to live? What's life expectancy? So if you're in good health, late 50s, you've easily got another 20, 25 years, and you've set aside in retirement savings $60,000. Those numbers don't work. And we're not talking about it, because there's a lot of shame in landing here. And the truth of it is, I'm not talking about people who have struggled all their lives and are now struggling as older adults. I'm talking about middle-income Americans who were doing fine and are now facing downward mobility into poverty and near poverty. That's the conversation we're not having. And I'll just add one other quick point. This is not a pesky little boomer problem. Gen Xers don't have pensions either, most of them. Millennials definitely don't have pensions. Both groups are facing stagnant wages, uncertain work, escalating costs in health care, in housing, in education. So it's not just boomers. Boomers are, we're just first up this hill without a map or a net, dealing with a much smaller nest egg and this longevity bonus that's not really a bonus if you can't afford it.
So this is the new normal. This is the new normal where people are being gradually downsized as they age, and they don't have enough savings to get through a complete retirement, to get to those 20 or 30 years after they step down. This is life in America today?
I think this is the new normal. And we even see it when we look at the furlough that's happening going into the 30th day, I think today. And people would think, okay, government workers, that's a, you know, good government job. There are many people who aspire to that. But what are we hearing? We're hearing that when people miss that second paycheck, they're in dire straits. We have 80% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. So what else does that mean? That means that people are not setting aside money for retirement because they can't afford it. And so we have now, we're going to live into our late 70s and 80s, but we're not in a situation anymore, most of us, where our employer is doing the retirement savings for us.
Now, were you depressed? Or tell us what happened when this realization hit you. How did it affect you?
I felt ashamed. I felt embarrassed. I've got these, you know, so-called elite credentials, and I had landed here. At one point, I was an entrepreneur. I started a business. It lasted for almost a decade. And then just ultimately could not sustain it. It was a retail business. I had stores in a number of states. But I was sourcing from small artisan producers. I couldn't get the volume out that I needed, and that business ultimately failed. So that was like in the early 2000s. And then I got two good consultancies that lasted till the Great Recession. And what happens when companies are retrenching? Consultants are the first to go. So I was embarrassed. The faking normal in the title is because I was pretending like I was okay. I thought all the strategies that I used to use. So I was still trying to network. You know, you spruce up your resume. You dye your hair. I was writing the compelling letter to CEOs. All the stuff that I was used to doing, all the things that used to work, and my phone wasn't ringing. It wasn't until I started to notice what was happening to other friends of mine, and we started to talk. And we started to talk candidly. And women talk, I think, way more than men, actually, who have landed here. And that's when I wrote the essay and then got the response that I did and realized that I was not alone. So once you know you're not alone, there's something empowering about that. It helps to deal with the shame and embarrassment. Now, I also say this. If you were to look through my background, you're going to see some dumb thing I did, some other dumb thing I did. We all could have saved more, and we have to own that. But there's something systemically happening when tens of millions of Americans are landing here and can't afford to grow old in America. That's a bigger problem, and that's what I'm hoping my book can help to start that conversation. And then in practical terms, my book is dealing with in the meantime. So before we have the big fix and the huge sort of, this is a moonshot kind of problem that I'm talking about here. But in the meantime, there are a lot of people who've landed here. So my book is about the practical things we can do when we land here today.
Our guest is Elizabeth White. The book is 55, Underemployed, and Faking Normal, Your Guide to a Better Retirement Life. So in other words, your book is not about public policy, changing public policy. Your book is about how to empower yourself.
Yes. Because, and I have the background to do like a wonky kind of think tank kind of book, but that would not have helped me when I was in the lowest points of despair. I couldn't even get through a book like that. My model in writing this book was I'm standing at my back fence talking to my neighbor. And I wanted people, when they read this book, to see themselves, to hear from others who have landed exactly where they are, and to see what strategies they're using to make sense of this new normal.
Well, there's lots of ideas in this book about where to retire, how to build retirement income, lots of ideas about how to network, and lots of ideas about how to look for side jobs to increase income. It's quite a compilation. I mean, I was reading it, and I thought, oh, okay, if this ever happens to me, I'm going to open up your book again and look for ideas. But let's, for instance, we're in this Uber economy, though. A lot of the side jobs you mentioned are part of this temporary economy. Is that the way out?
So the way I look at it is, how do we create a casserole of work? Because many of us are going to need multiple income streams to make this work in our future. Many of my women friends, particularly empty nesters, are with Airbnb. They're renting out that room or they're renting out a couch as a way to supplement their income. In fact, the fastest growing segment of Airbnb are women in their 50s. So it's part of a strategy. It's not the whole strategy. There's a reason. When Uber did a study, they found that they had more drivers over 50 than under 30. So we're already in the sharing economy, or sometimes I call it the sharing the crumbs economy. It's not the answer, but in the absence of federal policy and a larger solution, we're going to be cobbling together different kinds of income streams. And then on the other side, I talk about what I call smalling up. And smalling up is not just having a budget. When you land here, you have a budget. Smalling up is really about what do you need to feel grounded and content? And what are some alternative ways, less expensive ways, that you can bring those things into your life? And my book is about also the hard decisions that many of us are making. I had a roommate at one time. You think I want a roommate? I've lived, you know, alone a long time. But you do what you need to do. And so this book is about how do you cobble together the income. I mean, hopefully, I mean, if you can get to a place where the part-time or contract work or entrepreneurial venture you have is aligned with your values and what you love to do, that's kind of the goal that we're moving towards. Many of us are not going to be in those W-2 kind of high-income jobs again. So that's the reality. And then how do you both reduce your footprint, your expenses? So do you need that 2,500 square foot house? How many rooms in there are you actually living in? This is why 40% of people in tiny homes are people over 50 as well. So what I wanted the book to do was give people options to get people who've landed here, like me, thinking about, okay, how do I do the rest of my life differently if I don't have the income that I'm used to having?
Is one of your ideas to move from a more expensive city to a less expensive city as a way to cut way back on costs?
Yeah, and even I this time interviewed a group of American women who have moved to San Miguel Allende, Mexico. And they approached me, one of them, who was on a fixed Social Security income, had been living in New York City, and just got to be in her late 50s, early 60s, and said, I cannot afford to be here, and moved down there, contacted me. And I said, I mean, are you, who else is it just you? Or, and she said, no, there's a whole community of American women. Come and talk to us. And I went, and I met women living on fixed incomes from about $600 a month to about $2,000 a month, and just talked to them about what was that option? How did that work? So this book is options. It looks at shared housing. It looks at tiny housing. It looks if you're going to live overseas. It looks at the sharing economy. We need options because we're in this new normal, as I say, without a map or a net. So we are making our path by walking, and we don't have to do it alone. There are a lot of us out here on this path, and we can learn from each other.
Well, Elizabeth White is the author of 55 Underemployed and Faking Normal, Your Guide to a Better Retirement Life. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you for having me.
That was Elizabeth White. She's a graduate of Oberlin and Harvard. She fell on hard times, and the book came out of that, the book 55 Underemployed and Faking Normal. And she points out that 20 million elderly Americans will be in poverty by the year 2035, a rate the country hasn't seen since the Great Depression. And of the older workers in the economy right now, they are pretty employed, but about half the jobs employing older workers, 52%, pay full-time workers less than $15,000 a year. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. If you want to comment about that interview, you're welcome to. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Well, I'm going to mention some news stories that we could talk about in addition to the problems of low income as you approach retirement. So we can talk about these topics. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Speaking of wages, Orlando trial attorney John Morgan, the one who pushed the state initiative legalizing medical marijuana, has a new goal. He wants to increase the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour. Morgan told an Orlando news conference yesterday he's submitting 120,000 signatures to get an initiative on the state's 2020 ballot. That's more signatures than are required to get a judicial review. Every proposed constitutional amendment has to be reviewed by the Florida Supreme Court. Judicial review is just the first step. He needs a total of 700,000 verified signatures on the petition in order to get on the ballot in 2020. And again, we could talk about that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Well, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis has chosen a top official from the Trump administration for a seat on the Florida Supreme Court. He's filled out all three vacancies on the court now. Yesterday, DeSantis announced he's chosen Carlos Muniz for the high court. Muniz has been working as an attorney for Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Muniz has never served as a judge. Well, lying to Florida lawmakers could become punishable by a $1,000 fine and 90 days in jail under a bill unanimously approved by the Florida Senate Committee yesterday. The Senate Judiciary Committee gave its approval to a measure that would make disorderly or contemptuous conduct while appearing before a legislative committee a second-degree misdemeanor. The bill says that includes deliberately making false statements while testifying before a legislative committee. Now, the problem with that bill, though, is that there's no House companion yet. Well, it could take a decade or more for Florida's timberlands in northeast Florida, devastated by Hurricane Michael, to recover. The Florida Forest Service director says that not only will recovery take a long time, but there's an immediate threat of wildfires from the countless trees that fell down during the October hurricane. The forest director says about 1.4 million acres had severe or catastrophic tree loss, meaning 75 to 95% of pine trees in those forests were damaged or destroyed. Florida's Constitutional Revision Commission would no longer be able to place items on the ballot that contain more than one subject under a bill approved by a Senate committee yesterday in Tallahassee. The Senate Judiciary Committee unanimously approved the bill yesterday after senators complained about several items the Constitution Revision Commission placed on last November's ballot. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to, I've got some more news stories I want to mention before we really open up all the lines, but let's go to Patrice in St. Petersburg. Hi, Patrice, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I just want to say I really enjoyed your section here on the show because I'm a woman just like it. You know, a series of events happened to me in my life. You know, my husband passed away when I was 48. Eventually, I lost the house. I lost the property. You know, I'm on Social Security disability, trying to get on lists for, you know, housing. And it's just getting worse and worse, you know. So I have to keep selling things off in order to try to stay alive because, you know, I'm disabled. And right now I'm about to be out of housing. So today in the city, that's why I'm listening to your radio show, I'm driving around to women's shelters and food shelves to see what type of help I can get, you know, resources that may be available to me out there. Because it's true, there are so many of us. You know, I'm just past my mid-50s. You know, my life is winding down. And trying to survive in this atmosphere, it's just getting worse. And I just felt as though I needed to call and make that comment that there's just so many women like me out there, and there isn't much help, and there isn't much resources, and it's just getting worse.
Yeah, you know? Well, maybe some of our listeners could help out. Patrice, when you got married, did you ever envision something like this happening to you?
No, I didn't. My husband was a very good man. He was a professional civil engineer for years. He did make a six-figure income. We built our own home. We had our own property. And unfortunately, he passed away very young of an asthma attack. And from that point on, once his income stopped, even though I was in school, I was in college, I'm educated, and I was working part-time, I couldn't keep my head above water, you know? And eventually, I had to sell the house, basically give it away, you know? And then I had to pay the mortgage off, and then that left me with very little left to live on. I never thought in a million years that I would wind up where I'm at now.
You're on Social Security disability. How does it meet your needs? What, you know, is it essentially leaving you in poverty, or does it get you right at the, you know, break even point, or what does Social Security disability do for you right now?
Right now, what it's doing for me is it allows me to live about 2 weeks. That's food, gas, telephone, no extras. I mean, no extras whatsoever. You know, car insurance in order to keep my car on the road. I mean, I was an orphan child, so I was raised by my grandparents. And I can remember my grandfather teaching me, if you can keep the roof over your head and keep your car on the road, then you can always find a job and you can always make money and you'll get by. And so I try to stick to that, you know, keep the car on the road and try to keep the roof over my head and keep on going. And I feel as though I'm fighting a losing battle. You know, I even went to my MD the other day to explain my situation to her, and their advice was to go to the emergency room. I asked, really?
Because you have no health insurance.
Well, the only health insurance I have is Medicare.
Medicare, okay. So tell me what it's like to go around to some of the social service places that you've gone to looking for assistance. What's happened as you've gone to these places?
Well, most of them are full up, and there's waiting lists. And they do intakes. So, like with the women, you meet with the director, you sit down, she does an intake, you know, try to see if you're a good match and this is where you belong. But then you wind up on a waiting list. There are some women shelters. I was just told this morning, I think the Salvation Army or St. DePaul's or something, where you can stay for 30 days. Some of that of the women at these places are very helpful, and they want to help you out. And some of them are really curt. It's almost like they're kind of fed up with so many of us coming in looking for help. So they're a little short with you, you know. I do the best I can trying to find information on the web and even in the library. It's not like I'm not doing the footwork. But how I feel as a woman today, because of what's happened in my life, my self-worth, my self-esteem is bottoming out. And the more it bottoms out, the harder it is to try to get out there and look for that help, you know? And I just, you know, I really think our whole nation's in a sad state.
Yeah, I agree with you. Patrice, so you've got a place to live right now, but you're not sure you can hang on to it. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I am renting a room. And it's a reasonable amount of money, and but they're selling the house, so I've got to move out.
So you're about to be homeless.
I'm about to be homeless. Yeah, I'm about to be homeless, and real soon. You know, so you know, and I'm in shock, to tell you the truth. I mean, I guess I think that's a lot of it is like shock. You know, you're trying to hold on to a straight thought and get yourself through something, but you know, I'm nervous.
I think everybody who's listening understands. Have you tried to call the 211 line for social services?
Yes, I have.
And have you had any luck there?
Well, they have sent me to a few places. Like I said, I can get some food now through a food shelf or food bank, so that's helpful. And they're the ones that got me going on filling out lists for housing authorities in different counties in Florida. But their waiting lists are so long. They're 1 to 3 years to get into, you know, low-income housing. And I do have an income, and I could manage to pay the rent, and I could manage to keep the roof over my head. You know, it's just, and not only that, you think about it, if I were to try to, say I found an apartment for $500 a month, for me to try to save up enough money for first, last security, I couldn't do that. I mean, I wouldn't be able to eat for like 3 months. So, I mean, the thing is, it's not just me, because I come out to the park sometimes to just sit and I talk with other women, and they're my age, and so many of them are in very similar boats, you know, so.
Well, this is a problem our country's got to solve, and let's hope that one of our listeners has an idea for you.
I certainly hope so, because I'll continue to listen to the station. Like I said, today I just pulled over here at the park to try to get some serenity. You know, it's a beautiful day. And try to calm down and watch the birds, because that's another thing. I can't drive around all day either. I didn't burn up the gas I have in my car.
Yeah, you don't have enough gas. Yeah.
Where's the money coming from? You know, I've sold everything I have pretty much. So, I mean, it's scary. It really is. So that's when I heard your show. And I would like the name again of the woman who wrote that book, because I didn't catch it.
Okay. All right. I'm going to announce it after we say goodbye. Patrice,
okay.
Are you still listening? Will you be able to listen to the radio, though?
Yeah, I'm sitting here in my car at the park listening at the radio.
All right. I will announce it in just a second.
All
right, Patrice,
so
thanks a lot. Good luck. And Patrice, you should know that you're not alone. There's a lot of people in your position. Well, I was interviewing Elizabeth White, White Just Like the Color, and the book is 55 Underemployed and Faking Normal. It's just been published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Well, if you've got an idea about how to help Patrice and other people in her circumstances, being faced with prospects of being homeless in the next few weeks, call us up, 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's take some phone calls, and I'll read some of these emails, too. David writes this regarding the first guest today. David says, I am the poster child for this. I'm 54, I'm driving Uber, and I'm doing manual labor, and I still need one more stream of income. I have a math degree and decades of software experience, and now I'm just old and expensive, and I have no savings, only debt, writes David. David, thanks for telling us about your situation. Jackson Palm Harbor, he writes this. It's amazing how far we have become. The more the top 1% take the largest share of the dollar economy, the more a larger percent of our middle class goes lower and lower, writes Jack in Palm Harbor. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Somebody in the 813 area code says there is a great independent resource. It's an organization called Homeless Helping Homeless. So maybe Patrice and others in that situation, people who are about to be homeless, can look up that organization, Homeless Helping Homeless. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Jeff Haynes is our phone producer today, and let's go to Mark, who's in Riverview. Hi, Mark. You're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Yes, was concerned about that lady there with the problem of the having a place to live.
Yep.
There's a old, it's not real old, Hunter, but the renters before knocked all the windows out of it, but I've got all the windows for the place from another trailer that I'm tearing down. She wants to call me at area code 813-391-5891. That's 391-5891. And I can probably set you in the right direction with that. And also probably the preacher of all the churches around here. We have a lot of churches around here. And I personally know one of them that is my friend. His name is Craig Schwartz at the Redeemer over there on Boyette. And we might be able to help her out. More than likely will than not.
All right, Mark, thanks for letting us know about that. Thanks. And Mark, you're in Riverview. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
In Riverview on the backside of Fishhawk. This is a real nice neighborhood around here. Everybody's real, there's no crime around here or anything like that. And it's nice and peaceful and all that.
All right, Mark, thanks for the suggestion. Thank you.
No problems, only solutions.
All right. Thanks, Mark. That's a great way to view life. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. We're going to go to Kathy in Clearwater. Hi, Kathy, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. I've done a lot of traveling. There's 2 points I want to make. I don't understand why our government is spending our taxpayer dollar on endless, meaningless wars instead of helping we, the people, out. Most countries, they let their people retire at age 55, and you don't have to worry about your dental, your medical coverage. I think we could have a new approach if we would just get away from what we're invading 10 different countries. The average American doesn't even realize that. We need to take care of our own. And women, let's come together. I see a lot of land here, and we could develop little tiny house communities on these land plots that are for sale all over town. That's all I had to say.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot. Thanks. Yeah, where we spend our tax dollars, that's a big issue. And do you, you know, one of the questions I have is, do you feel like the U.S. needs to be involved in wars in places like Yemen or Syria? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Just a few months ago in October, at Tyndall Air Force Base in the Panhandle, we had more than a dozen very expensive aircraft almost destroyed, nearly destroyed, by Hurricane Michael. Every one of those F-22s cost $300 million. And for some reason, the Air Base commander there didn't protect the planes. $300 million of your tax dollars. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Romeo in Bradenton. Romeo, you're on WMNF.
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
So, here's my thought. Capitalism doesn't work. When they take control like they have, they've been playing this shell game with not only the Americans, but the rest of the world, where they allow them to make just enough earnings so that they won't revolt. And they've got everybody convinced that it's such a great process, but what we really need, and in a perfect world, you'd have something called probably compassionate capitalism, but I think that's not possible.
Romeo, why do you think this issue of people who are borderline homeless isn't being debated in Washington, D.C.? I mean, the president wants to debate the wall, but we don't have this debate about people who worked all their lives, did everything they were supposed to do, and now they're facing homelessness. Why do you think that they would rather debate a wall than debate this issue, which I'm sure affects tens of millions of Americans?
Well, you know very well, it's the media. It really is. And on both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats, the media companies don't want this because their advertisers and their sponsors that pay them doesn't want to hear that and doesn't want to upset, rock the boat, so to speak. That's what it is.
I'm not sure it's the media. I think it's the nature of the people that we elect. I think it's the people that are up there have no idea what it's like to work paycheck to paycheck. That's what I think. I mean, the media is part, so no doubt the media is part of it. I should say that my guest, Elizabeth White, has been on twice on the PBS NewsHour. And every time she's on, they get a huge response on the NewsHour at 7 o'clock on WEDU. But this is not, you know, at night, if I watch MSNBC or Fox or CNN, they're not talking about this issue. And you're right, the media is part of the problem, but I think the politicians, too, they're not stepping up and raising the issue of people who work all their lives and then are facing homelessness.
Well, and you're absolutely right, but it is up to the media, ultimately, to hold the politicians to task, since the nation as a whole doesn't have much of a voice.
Well, we need a commercial media, too. Maybe you're right. Maybe the advertisers won't let commercial media talk about these issues, but we need a media that has a big audience that looks at these issues of working all your life and then relying on a $700 or $900 Social Security check. You just can't live on, you know, $700 or $900.
Here's where we are in America. Most people, and I would estimate 90% of the people in America, from the day they're born to the time they retire and die, all they do is work to sustain themselves and to exist. And that, to me, is inappropriate.
Yeah, no, I agree. Romeo, we're on the same page. Romeo, thanks a lot.
Yeah, just quickly, you saw the Oxfam report, right?
Yeah, I mentioned it yesterday.
1% has gained.
No. 20. No. Well, that may be true, but 26 billionaires own as much wealth as 3.5 billion people on the planet.
Right, but the last 50% of the lowest income people, their income didn't go up at all in the last 2 years. So that's just leave you with that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Romeo. Thanks.
You bet.
Yeah, a lot of those people live on $5.50 a day, that Oxfam report said. It just came out over the weekend. And I mentioned it yesterday on the show. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, you're on WMNF.
Yes, Rob. I consider the situation in which we're talking about. And this is what I come to this conclusion right here. The government is working exactly the way it's supposed to. It is designed to work, just like the criminal justice system. It's working the way it's designed to work. And I said this, if there's Republicans and Democrats, they are on opposite sides. So that's the way the government wanted, so they can keep doing what they do, and one side is going to gravitate towards that government and be against the other side.
Well, Gino, how do you get out of this? This poor woman, Patrice, married a guy, rich guy, or he had a good career, six-figure income. She worked too. She got a good education, and now she lost her house. She's renting a room, and she's being faced with homelessness. Those people populate Elizabeth White's book that I interviewed at the top of the show. How do we get out of this?
We have to become one. We have to say, okay, bump the Democrat, bump the Republican. We are one. We're not going to let these top people push us around and do this thing like her. Become poor and she can't sustain living anymore. We got to say, okay, no more of this craziness. For instance, the guy that went to prison, who just got out of prison 45 years, and he just got out of prison, and he's on food stamps, and he just got out because they found out he didn't do it. 45 years. Everybody come together. All the white people say, hey, listen, nope, you're not going to put this black man in jail. We're not going to let you do it. Everybody on the same page. And we ain't going to have no president and that lie five times a day. We're not going to have it. You're gone. Everybody on the same page. No Democrat, no Republican. I guarantee you, if not, those 90% of the people in America that live check to check say we're not going to do it, and everybody come together, I promise you, they will be scared because they'll be scared of revolt. It will not happen if everybody's on the same page. But as long as I'm black over there, and you white over there, and you Republican over there, you Democrat over there, it will continue to happen, and the rich are going to keep getting richer, and we're going to keep looking at each other. Oh, the news is doing it. The news is doing it. It's the media that's doing it. Nope, it's us letting them do it.
All right, Gino, thanks. Thanks for your comments. All right, great to hear from you, Gino. Anonymous writes this, if Patrice is on disability, she will soon be getting Medicare. And I think she already is. If she makes less than $1,386 a month, she could sign up for a secondary with a Medicare savings plan. They give you back up to $135 a month and have super low co-payments or no co-payments at all, along with very low prescription costs. United Healthcare has a great plan. Writes Michelle, or rather Anonymous. Sorry about that. 813-239-9663. By the time we get to $15 minimum wage, writes Anonymous, we're going to need $30 an hour. You know, that is my question, too. Is $15 even enough right now? Wendell's in downtown St. Pete. As cliche as it sounds, he writes, I'm in the same boat as your guest, Elizabeth White. From $90,000 a year to being a janitor, I'm over 60, I'm smart, I'm educated, and I'm unable to find dutiful work. It's clearly capitalism that's causing this dystopia. And like gun violence, it's terrible when it happens to you, but no one is going to do anything. It's going to boil over. Watch. That's Wendell in downtown St. Petersburg. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Hi, Kevin. You're on WMNF.
Hey, Rob. I appreciate this program greatly. I just want to mention one thing about pensions, for example. You know, I'm 60, going on 64, and I was doing well too, not quite as high paying as some of these jobs. But anyway, you know, if you have a health care crisis while you're, you know, still working age and you're at the age where you're supposed to be making the most money you're ever going to make, and then it's all taken away from you. So there's just another reason. But the only reason I'm doing better than Patrice is because when I worked for the post office, I had a pension. And unfortunately, you know, I had to leave early because of the cancer, so my pension wasn't as big as it was going to be. But my point is that, you know, without a pension, these are the people that are falling through the cracks. So what can we do? I think the one solution that could help is just national health care. I mean, it might not be the answer for everything, but it could certainly help people like Patrice or people like me and the future people that are going to go into debt because of health care costs. So,
yeah, because we know one of the biggest causes of debt in the U.S., the debt crisis, is health care. Yeah.
And then, you know, I want to dovetail this into the thing about the wall. You know, I think the untold story there is that the people that are furloughed or the people that aren't getting paid don't have enough money to make ends meet when they miss a paycheck or two. So, you know, you add all these things together, and what do you see? You see how come people are taking so many opioids and all these different things, you know, that are happening to you know, the older generation, sometimes even the younger. And then, you know, you have the Republicans saying that the people are poor because they spend their money on movies and booze and women. You know, it's just so ludicrous that, like you're saying, that they don't talk about the issues that are so important to most Americans. And I'm going to go back to that one thing, and it's pensions. If people actually had jobs that had paid them a decent pension, they wouldn't be, you know, so poor because Social Security doesn't give them enough money.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Kevin. Kevin, anyway, thanks a lot. All right, great to hear from you. You know, speaking of those shutdown workers, Sean Canan on the news yesterday interviewed or had statements from two people, Deborah Hanna, a transportation security worker at Orlando International Airport. She was talking about the effect of the shutdown on her family and her family income. Here's Deborah Hanna.
This is ridiculous that we have to come to work without being paid. I have an officer that had to send her mom up north to a brother because her paycheck is not coming in and she cannot afford her mom's medication that she depends on. I've got officers who are already getting eviction notices because the complexes don't want to hear that you're not getting paid. We come to work every day to do our job because that's the oath that we took and that's our mission. And we work with FAA and everyone else in the airlines to try to do everything that we need to do. And it's not fair that we're working unpaid. So we're asking that President Trump, in his infinite wisdom, reopens the government and starts paying us, because we're going to do our job regardless. But it's hard when you have to worry about whether you're getting evicted to concentrate on your job, or whether you've got food to put on the table or medication for your children or gas, like was said, to come to work.
All right, so not only, that's Deborah Hanna, a TSA worker at Orlando International Airport. She was part of a press conference yesterday at Tampa International Airport. Not only are we seeing workers face homelessness after leading a life that we all try to lead and aspire to, because Social Security hardly pays anything, but now there's added pressure because of the government shutdown, and even workers are being put in these dire financial straits. Here's Bob Haas. He represents the Air Traffic Controllers Association at Tampa International.
Nobody should be under the illusion that it's business as usual right now for the aviation industry. Our controllers are showing up every single day. We're working 6-day work weeks without pay. My wife's actually an air traffic controller in that building right over there. We're working 6 days without a paycheck. I don't know what to tell my children right now when we go to work. I can't pay my children's daycare. Can't pay my mortgage. I have a hard time getting gas in the car to get to work, as everybody said. But this prolonged government shutdown is really eroding the layers of safety that we have. Is it, people fly through this airport every day. We're in our busiest season that Tampa Airport has ever seen in the history. We're working hard without this issue. Add the level of stress that we have right now on top of the busiest season that Tampa Air Traffic Control has ever seen. And imagine the amount of stress that we take onto our jobs every single day. We're asking for the end of the shutdown to continue to pay us and put us back to work, please.
That's Bob Haas of the Tampa Air Traffic Controllers Association. Let's go back to the phones. Our phone number is 813 239-9663. Let's go to Terry in Bradenton. Hi, Terry. You're on WMNF.
Hello. I think you're getting a lot of calls, actually, from Bradenton because that's where I'm at. And, yeah, economically around here, it is not good. I think the right-to-work laws are affecting a lot of the economy. I mean, you can't get a full-time job, and you can't make enough at the part-time hours they give you. You can't get a second job because they want to play with your hours all the time. You can get fired for any crazy reason or no reason at all. How can anybody survive that way? And now, with the government shutdown, I mean, government jobs used to be a way of getting a good career, a good living. And he's cutting that off, too. And in Florida, you've got a lot of elderly people. I bet you anything that most of the women, most of the people now that are in this position are older women. You got age discrimination. You've got sexual discrimination, you know, so you don't get hired for great jobs anyway a lot of times.
And Terry, do you think the folks in Washington, the president or members of the U.S. Senate or members of the House understand what you're seeing with your own eyes?
I think they're happy they're creating this mess. I think he is nothing more than a disruptor. All he's doing when he has gotten into this position is meddle with everything. How can he screw things up? And when he leaves office, we're all going to be stuck with this mess.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot. Thanks. Thanks for calling from Bradenton. Let's go to, we're going to go to Nancy in Sarasota. Nancy, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hello, I sympathize with the Tampa employees, and I just want to say Gino for president. Thank you for your show.
Okay, thanks, Nancy. Gino, thanks you too. Let's go to Susan on Anna Maria Island. Susan.
Yeah, hi, Rob. These stories are so sad. They're just terrible. I don't think it's totally the media's fault, but the problem the media has is they're not journalists anymore. They don't report. You're only supposed to report the news. Seems like a lot. Some are worse than others, but they're commentators. They have their opinion, and I think that they take these people and they paint them with a broad brush, like almost villainize them, like they're bums and this and that. And we need to elect people that are more like us, not billionaires or people that that have never walked in our shoes or have any idea of what it's like to live day by day on a like a regular person.
Yeah, I think that's right. Maybe we should not trust if the media just consists of people sitting around a table, and that includes my TV show. Maybe that's the media we shouldn't trust. Maybe we should look for media that actually interviews real Americans who are out there working or living day to day and having problems like Patrice. And if we don't see those faces in our media, maybe we shouldn't trust the media. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. Because we do need to see it. If you don't, out of sight, out of mind. And we do need the media to cover these real people in real lives with real problems.
Yeah.
So I would love to see that. But, the news here in the States is just, it's just not very good.
It doesn't reflect the country.
Your show's great.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Susan.
No, not at all.
It doesn't reflect the country. Yeah. Thanks, Susan. Anonymous writes this from the 904 area code. Rob, was it not Noam Chomsky that stated that my generation, I'm 50 years old, will be the first generation that can expect to earn less than their fathers before them? I think the person that first pointed that out was Barbara Ehrenreich, who wrote about this in the 1990s, that the current generation of millennials and younger, Generation X and millennials and younger, will earn less than their parents. Barbara Ehrenreich wrote about this, I think, in the book Nickel and Dimed. Hope that's right. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Mary in Memphis. Could that be right? Mary, are you in Memphis?
I'm not in Memphis right now. I am in Clearwater.
All right. So, Mary, we've got 30 seconds.
Okay,
wrap it up for us. Thank
you. I'm a widow. A small pension. I just wanted to let everybody know that the food bank in Clearwater, the Helping Hands, has an abundance of fruits and vegetables, and they're giving food away.
All right. That's good to know. Thanks a lot, Mary. Thank you, Mary. Thank you. Thank All right, great to hear from you. Well, you can go to the Helping Hands Food Bank there in Clearwater. I know all the food banks here in the Bay Area do a great job. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. I didn't get to all the topics I wanted to get to, but this was a very important topic. And if you record a comment about the show, I'll play it back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. We'll hear one of the Tampa mayoral candidates tomorrow at 11, the newest candidate. And stay tuned for NOLA. He's coming up next. This is WMNF Tampa St. Petersburg.